Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code FORECAST6.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast episode 80. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
You know, Scott, if we had been timing this better, we would have had it 80 on this episode.
Yeah, we totally could have. I was actually episode 80 while we were at Nerdtacular last week. Once again, I just want to thank Tom publicly right here on Forecast for coming to Nerdtacular 2011 over the weekend. We had a ball, but sadly no Forecast. But we loved all the fans that came out and said, hey, we love Forecast. That was kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic. If you didn't make it to Nerdtacular this year, do try to get there next year. Scott outdoes himself every year. I can't wait to see what you do next year.
Oh, man, I hope I don't disappoint. But, yeah, we're looking forward to 2012 just about as much as I can 3 days after 2011. So we'll see.
Are you recovered yet? You had to do the morning stream this morning, right?
I figure, we did a TMS this morning, and we were a little pooped, but we played some highlights this morning, talked a little about the show.
You did a clip show?
I realize maybe, give me 4 months, I'll start thinking about next year, I think, but between now and then, I'm going to chill a little bit.
All right, well, we're very excited to have a couple of great guests with us today. Joining us from Hack 5 are both our guests. First of all, Jason Applebaum, co-host and coder at Hack 5.
Yeah, we've been doing a bunch of the coding segments and the tutorials on how to get started in programming.
Thanks for coming on Forecast, man.
Thanks
for being in person.
Yeah, I live around here now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Also on Skype, Rob Fuller, penetration tester, certified checkbox unchecker, contributor on Hack 5, father, husband, and United States Marine, Rubik's. Welcome to the show. Well,
you kind of set me up wrong. I can't be there in person because I'm in Virginia, but now
you
I'm sad.
You get an excuse for being in Virginia, though. I mean, that would have been superhuman if you had somehow commuted from Virginia to the show.
But Marines are expected to be superhuman, so...
You could teleport.
You're too hard on yourself.
Okay.
I say that to a lot of Marines. You guys are too hard on yourselves. No, it's great to have you on the show. Rob, Jason, are you guys you familiar with the forecasting? Are you ready to do some predicting?
Absolutely.
All right, let's start off with a prediction from a listener that I have not yet picked. So this is going to be picked live on the air. Somebody wants to have Steve Gibson. Okay, we'll definitely try to get Steve Gibson. Somebody's talking about Tech News Today. Here we go. This is a good one for you guys. Coming from Andrew. Hey, Scott and Tom. I predict that now that LulzSec has hacked 4chan, the two groups are going to enter a hacker war to see who can hack the other, resulting from this government will hastily enter into Sarkozy-style controlling of the web, ruining the fun for all. Now, LulzSec and Anonymous, since he wrote us, have not only had a detente, but they have a joint operation
to take down the world.
So do you think that that will last, or will that fall apart, and then we go back to Andrew's prediction?
This has all happened before, and it's all going to happen again. This is nothing new at all.
Yeah, so in other words, yes, this is going to happen. This is going to fall apart, but no, they will not ruin the web.
I don't think they're going to have the opportunity to, because I think there's going to be so many insider bickerings, and then they'll split, and they'll join back, and they'll split, and then they'll become another third entity. And
I always have this sneaking suspicion that it's like Five Guys anyway, that it's just this handful of dudes who seem like big organized groups or even big unorganized anarchistic groups, but they're really just like five guys, and they all live in like the same neighborhood, and one of them says, you know what, we're In-N-Out Burger, and we're having a meeting, and I think tomorrow I'll be Anonymous, and you go be that other group. And I don't know why I feel that way, and maybe that opens me up to an attack. I don't know. But it feels like it's just this handful of dudes, that it's not these giant groups. And so they could put on a show that feels like a giant hacker war, but I have a feeling it'll be really this small scale joke that they'll all be in on, all five of them, and we won't, sadly.
That's how it's happened before. Like, that's exactly how it works. So five, ten, but they keep it small on purpose because, you know, how many people can you trust? Usually what the web of trust thing is, like, the most you can trust is 10 people, 11 people, whatever that book said. But it's usually a really small group of people, and there are people, lookalikes or act-alikes, that do the exact same thing. But that's about it. It's usually a very small group.
And I think I know the answer to this based on your answer to our emailer question, but we are seeing a lot more activity, or at least a lot more reporting of activity. Some people think that that's just because companies are more likely to want to admit stuff than they used to be. But I think there is actually more high-profile hacking going on. Is that just a kind of a temporary swell, or is this the beginning of some kind of hockey stick?
I mean, it comes and goes. I mean, you'll see a giant hack, and then they'll you know, rethink and regroup for the next one. But that could take years to really plan out, find the vulnerabilities, and exploit them.
But we're getting, like, SQL injection attacks every day from, like, 20 or 30 different groups. Is that just because the companies are now finally admitting it, whereas in the past they just sort of pretended it was a server problem and didn't want to admit that they were hacked? Now that Sony admitted they were hacked, everybody's like, eh, well, it's not that embarrassing
anymore. I mean, Sony got a lot of blowback for that, though. It wasn't just like, oh, we're hacked. Okay, everyone's fine. They offered years of identity theft protection, and that's a lot of money. And I think the bigger companies can afford that sort of thing, but the smaller companies that have those sort of huge leaks, it kind of tends to kill them. So I think there's still going to be the "we got hacked, but we're not telling anybody" sort of situation.
The dangers to me seems to be that we will that this will just become more and more in vogue to do. So you're going to have kids growing up with nothing to do, sitting around with sharp minds and a decent computer, and they're going to go, "Oh my gosh, look what's happening to multi-million-dollar organizations! They're fumbling all over themselves. They're losing customers.
CIA.
Or exactly, whatever. They're just falling apart. Wouldn't that be fun to be somebody who's doing that to them? We're going to have a whole new generation of hackers, smarter than the one that came before. And until we get ahead of that curve, and when I say we, I just mean everyone else gets ahead of that curve in terms of security, I just feel like we are just asking for decades of this is the fun thing to grow up and do. This is the thing to do in your teens and 20s before you start getting serious in your life. And that's bad. That just means more and more hackers, more and more problems. And because this stuff's just made by people and not Martians.
Well, you mean malicious hackers, not hackers.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there'll always be hackers, you know, taking things apart. But the malicious hackers, I don't know. Poking the bear is kind of, I mean, literally poking the bear in this case is, I don't exactly see bored teenagers sitting around going, I got an idea. Let's take on the largest, you know, intelligence organization in the United States. That's a great idea.
Rob, do you think we're ending up with a more secure internet because of this, though?
I think that the actual disclosures from companies are due to the fact that there's Twitter, there's Facebook, like, so they
are
to
keep a secret, huh?
Right. So they're just afraid that it's going to come out anyway, so they need to get ahead of it. So that's making them actually do better security, sort of. I guess my point of view is coming from where it's been happening for so long, and as a pen tester, I've seen such horrible vulnerabilities and stuff like that in tons of organizations, that I think that this is helping but also hurting.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but most security or most large companies rely on security by obscurity at this point, and just they haven't been hacked, so they don't really take it seriously.
Correct. That's about right.
Well, so that seems easy. Like, why don't we see more? Like, I know this accusation was levied at Sony, and they said, "All right, well, fine. It's one thing to get hacked when you're super tight, but you guys weren't super tight. You could have been easily super tight or much tighter than you were." So, what is that? Just the next step? Just everybody stay as tight as possible, as long as possible, and once in a while something will eke through. But companies need to just quit being lazy about that, and therefore spend more money, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a financial thing, I would think.
Right.
Because pen testing is fairly expensive.
It's lazy admins, really. People who get hired on right out of college or who just got into security because it makes money, and they don't care that much. People like myself or a bunch of the rest of the community that really cares about, like, security and would do it for free if they didn't half, you know, bills, would, it's just a small, such a smaller group, as in any, you know, business, right? Any form of art, I guess. It's just that these companies don't have the ability to hire the people who care about security enough to be proactive about it.
All right, well, let's move on into our short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later, maybe in the next few years. And Rob, we'll start for you with you. What do you got for us on the short-term scene?
I think that console gamers will finally see the light and start playing PC games.
So, victory for PC gaming.
I hope so.
Interesting.
Scott,
interesting,
what do you think?
Well, actually, it's funny you bring this up. This has been coming up a lot on The Final Score and other shows that I've been guesting on. And the issue of a shift back toward PCs is kind of a cyclical thing anyway. Like every console generation, which we are way on the tail end of, this is the longest lasting, it's the Retson of console generations. It's lasting forever and or a lot longer than usual. We should have new consoles from everybody by now, not just this new thing from Nintendo. But it's a longer tail this time because we've kind of reached not a wall. We've certainly got a ways to go, but we've reached a bit of a high watermark in terms of capability, and we've stayed there longer. Well, as a result, we're now dipping back into what PCs can do, and the PCs are blowing consoles away right now. And I found myself, I kind of follow this pattern. I'm big on consoles for a few years, and then I just start drifting back to my PC, and it's upgraded, and it's faster, and it's newer, and I'm doing stuff on there that looks three times as good, runs twice as fast, and we're seeing new experiences show up there, and we're seeing a lot of stuff in the way of, you know, competition from services like Steam that really do command a lot of attention and sort of get a lot of new players interested in playing on that platform as opposed to the downloadable content available on consoles. So I agree that there is a move back toward PCs, but I just think it's cyclical. And I don't know what the next generation brings. I don't know what downloadable means toward physical media and all the other sort of things that are in the air about the future of consoles, but if PCs can get smaller, more compact, more powerful, and more in more living rooms, and I don't mean just, you know, media server PCs that we've been trying to fiddle around with for 5 years, but really something new and special in that regard, and other interesting competition starts to show up from non-console makers like maybe Apple or Roku or other companies that may get into the business of building powerful hardware, powerful enough to run apps, quote-unquote apps or software or games, you're going to see a very different marketplace in the future. But yeah, the shift toward PCs right now is evident, and I hope it continues for the next at least couple of years because we're seeing some really fantastic experiences on PCs.
The cross-platform stuff is what's going to kill it, though.
The fact that you can play it on anything, right?
Yeah, like, right,
I can Mac, play a PC, it doesn't matter.
Right. So I can play my Team Fortress 2 on my Mac as well as on my PC, and, you know, being able to play against those players that are on either platform makes it that much easier to, you know, get into. Whereas with the console, if my buddy doesn't have the Xbox 360 and I want to play with him and he has the PS3, I'm screwed.
Well, there's another switch there's a wild card in this mix this time around, and that is something we didn't have in the last generation Switch or the one before that, and that is weird new technologies and services like On Live. Now, I'm still kind of skeptical about OnLive's ultimate viability, but lately they're impressing the crap out of me with what they're able to do, and they're able to do it on thin, dumb clients. They showcase stuff at E3 where I could have an iPad and an account with them and a controller, and my iPad suddenly becomes a portable video game screen. With the right bandwidth, I'm playing, you know, full fidelity, high fidelity video game. I'm playing the new Batman Arkham City game on that thin client wherever I want to be through some kind of subscription service. Those kinds of services were unheard of 5 years ago. That kind of changes everything if they can pull that off, and if the rest of this country can catch up bandwidth-wise and start forgetting about caps and figure out a way to get more fiber to the home and that sort of thing, that changes everything and kind of makes these, you know, whoever's hot new box kind of irrelevant when it's all handled on the server side and the clients can be as thin as they want. So that's a whole other factor to this that we've never had to deal with before, and I don't know how that shakes out, but I think it does have an effect, whether we like it or not.
I think we're going to end up seeing a total fragmentation in video games. So, you know, in the past it's been like, well, where are video games? Are they on consoles? Are they on PCs? They're going to be all over the place. We're going to have certain types of gamers playing on their phones, which we already have. We're going to have certain types of video games being played on the Wii U PZ or whatever they decide to call it in the future. And we're going to have serious, what we've traditionally thought of about video gamers moving back to the PC, and I think Rob's right about that. But I don't think that kills consoles. I think consoles are going to morph into your set-top box that is your entertainment center. So you play video on there, you play audio on there, you've got, you know, the ability to check email and Twitter and play some games. Like everything else, like your phone is able to play games, your console becomes more than just a video game. I think that's really smart of Microsoft and Sony to go after that. Nintendo's taking a slightly different tack. It's got a little bit of that entertainment center feel to it, but they're saying we're a different kind of game than PC gaming. If you want to do PC gaming, you wouldn't probably want to buy a Nintendo anyway. Even though they're trying to make sure that the hardcore gamer doesn't discount them because they want to sell some more.
Yeah, I really think that right now we have mentioned the barrier between multiplayer gaming. If you're on PS3, you can't play someone on 360. I don't know why that barrier is there other than to sell 360s or to sell, you know, X consoles, because technologically they're almost the same. They both, you know, they all use packets. I mean,
yeah.
And they're all the same game.
There's no technical reason.
No, I don't think there's a technical reason.
Although there is the idea that, you know, if you're on a PC, you have an advantage over somebody trying to use a game controller.
Well, they can get a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, we just add keyboards.
Or buy a real gaming
console. But it's also true the other way around. The people on consoles have had this other advantage with controllers that are just better controllers for certain kinds of games.
Yeah.
So if you're playing a first-person shooter, or better yet, something like a strategy game, StarCraft II or something, a mouse and a keyboard are not only preferred, they are crucial in those kinds of experiences. But it's also kind of the flip of that with like racing games, platforming games, certain action games. And in those cases, it is so easy now, another point in Microsoft's column, to hook a 360 controller up to your PC. And those games are inherently supporting them. They even show all the graphical representations of triggers and buttons that correspond with the controller themselves. I just see those two worlds kind of moving together. And with the advent of Steam and other digital services, changes the whole game for PCs. It makes it a really viable platform for even those games I want to sit back on my butt on a couch and play on a big TV, which is exactly what I do with my PC and certain games with a controller. So not everyone's doing that, but I think there's a movement toward that, and the lines are just being sort of blurred. And then OnLive will come in and kill it all anyway.
Well, you have to have internet for OnLive. And yeah, I found out that that's not something you can always have.
You found that out today.
Yes, today in fact.
Not yet. I think it will be eventually, but yeah, we're not there yet. All right, let's move over to you, Jason. Short-term prediction, something you see on the near-term future. What do you got for us?
Cell phones and laptops becoming one.
Ah, the slap-top.
The slap-top, indeed. So so not this dock that the Atrix does for $500 million, but actual larger tablets that either have keyboards you attach to them or things like that, because I really think Android or insert your 5 years down the road mobile operating system is going to be able to do everything your high-end laptop can do.
That's kind of what Microsoft's shooting for with their previews of Windows 8.
Yeah, because it's Windows 8 mobile and Windows 8 desktop. And
yeah, they've got this Metro-looking UI that is over the top of Windows 8 that is very tablet-y. Mm-hmm. But you don't think we'd have the small form factor phone anymore?
No. I think everyone's going to move to, and it sounds weird, but we may move back to the earpiece. So you've got this giant tablet, but when you answer a phone call, maybe you pop out an earpiece and stick it in your ear. And then you've got your phone.
Where do you keep the tablet? You know, you can't stick it in a pocket.
Well, we're going to get bigger jeans.
that's Scotty Vest.
That's a real prediction.
Jeans with tablet-sized pockets.
Got it.
That is my favorite prediction, that we're all going to have huge, huge pockets in our jeans moving forward to accommodate this new super future. But I'm not actually arguing one way or the other against or for this prediction, but just to throw it out there and play devil's advocate, why do you see the reversal of a trend that is already smaller, thinner, tinier? Like why does that?
Because
go away?
That trend is already reversing now. There are phones out there with dual 1.2 and 2.0 gigahertz processors. There was one released on the 15th. It's a dual 2 gigahertz processor. Yes, it's an ARM, but the thing still gets hot. It still sucks batteries. It reminds me a lot of a Mac at this point, and the batteries are starting to get bigger. And it's a 6-inch a 4.5-inch phone. I mean, that's not a far stretch from 10 or 12, and people are already carrying laptops.
Or 7-inch. Yeah.
But I just think screens are going to get thinner, and it's going to get thinner. I'm not so concerned it's going to get thicker, but I just think the actual usable surface or the bevel is going to start to disappear like the MTV.
Foldable.
Or two screens that fold, or just you're talking about foldable LCDs.
Yeah, just roll it up.
Roll it up. Hmm. Roll it up. But then you've got to fix, then you need longer
pockets.
Is that
a slablet in your pocket, or are you happy to see me?
Yeah, I don't, I do this thing now where I'll use my phone a little bit and go, I'll just wait until I get home and do this on my iPad, like I'm looking through my news feed or something, because I need to gather articles for the next morning show. So
did you say you wait? This
is a pain. I'll just do this when I go home, and I'll do that. I'll wait until I've got a bigger screen in front of me before I go through that stuff, because I'm just more kind of comfortable and less hunched over. And so I can, I think there's an argument to be made that a lot of the things we need to use these devices for are better suited at a larger size. But if you'd asked me this, 3 years ago, I probably would have argued with you and said, no way, we're just going to get smaller and smaller. The whole point is to be as portable as humanly possible. And I'm finding personally that I need to be, I need some of one and the other, depending on the task.
Did you say you waited to get home to use an iPad?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
So you wait till get home to use a mobile device?
Well, no. See, I'm out with, I'm out with, my phone somewhere where I'm not going to carry. I don't have those pants you have with a huge pocket, right? So I'm not carrying around my iPad with me necessarily. But I remember just the other day, Saturday, running around with a bunch of people here still in Salt Lake for the conference. And I don't remember what I was looking up or trying to do. And I was like, it's a pain. I'm going to be back there in 2 hours. I'll just do it on my iPad when I get home. And I've only got a Wi-Fi iPad, so whatever.
It's not that mobile.
It's not that mobile. You need to glue a hotspot to it.
Rob, do you think you would be comfortable just having a tablet-y cell phone laptop?
Actually, I think that I'll have all of them. I think that I'll have...
So he'll have the biggest pants of all.
Right. Just... they had to each his own. Like, I like the size of the iPad just so that I could have it around and I can actually sit down and watch a Netflix movie. And I also like my iPhone size because it fits in my pocket and it's with me wherever I go, so I have my email there. I mean, I know that if something absolutely happens on Twitter is an earthquake or whatever, I got it. Whereas I don't have those pants, so I can't take my iPad everywhere.
Right. The pants are the key.
The pants are the key.
And you mentioned watching Netflix, which they are actually a sponsor of Forecast. Let's take a quick break to thank them. You can stream thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, saving you time, money, and hassle. You want to watch Pulp Fiction because somebody just made some quote about, nobody move, or let's be like three little Fonzies or something, and you're like, I got to watch Pulp Fiction now. You can do that right now on your iPhone, on your Android phone, on your Xbox 360, your PS3, your Nintendo Wii, your iPad. If you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV box. They're inexpensive, easy to use, and with Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices. Try it now for free for 30 days. You can cancel anytime you want. Go to netflix.com/twit. to let them know that you heard about it here on one of the Twitch shows. Be sure to use that URL when you sign up or when you get somebody else to sign up. If you're a Netflix user, treat your friends. Say, look, you can get 30 days free. Might as well try it out. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. All right, let's move over to our long-term predictions. And Jason, we'll begin with you. These are the more in 100 years we'll be in flying cars kind of thing. What do you got?
I was actually going to say self-driving cars.
Okay.
But not
you
just self-driving cars. Well, I actually know.
Are
just,
you?
Yeah. I was saying okay. So self-driving cars. And not just the kind of self-driving cars where you're like, okay, you get in it, you tell it your destination, where you go. I'm saying self-driving cars to replace all of the other bad drivers. So you when you're driving down the road, when you're actually driving down the road, there'll be two license plates, a green and, I wouldn't say red, but black or another color that isn't as ominous. And one will be self-driving and one will be driving.
Okay.
So there'll be a mix. And people like
all me, in the same lanes?
All in the same lanes. Hmm. There'll be a mix because I feel like in a few years, there's going to be some times where I don't want to drive, like across country. I've done it, and it's not that fun. Everyone's like, I'm going to drive across country.
Boring,
it does. 3,000 miles through the desert is really bad.
Your arm starts to hurt.
Yeah. Especially if you do it all at once.
And your feet.
Your feet. Yeah.
Pedaling your Prius.
Yes, pedaling my...
Fred Flintstone style.
Exactly. But I think self-driving cars will become more prevalent, and I think they'll start to not...
You don't think we'll be...
missiles on the road.
Be split up into, here's the self-driving car lane, and here's the normal driving lane.
It's possible, but I think because that would require another road infrastructure, I don't see that happening because...
We just make the HOV lanes, then.
We'll just... But the HOV lane is where you get to go faster. No, but I think there'll be a mix, and I think, you know, with that mix, it'll cause, you know, speed limits to go away, and I think traffic will slowly get dissolved because everyone that can't drive will automatically go into auto drive, and we'll see this amazing trend towards there's huge red light effects, and, you know, there's huge traffic backups where there just isn't a traffic problem because everyone's driving 200 miles an hour to get to where they're going. There'll be a huge accident problem, but there won't be a traffic problem.
Wow. Let's do it. We've had similar stuff like this come up. We've talked about the Minority Report method of getting people around and dealing with traffic and whatnot.
It actually is faster when you have self-driving cars because they don't do stupid things like, you know, cut off somebody to get around them for 1 minute. They don't do they space themselves evenly. It's just more efficient than the sort of randomness with it that causes backups because people are like, I'm not going to let that person in, which actually slows down traffic for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all it takes.
Get in the turn lane and then hurry and go forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. It only takes one. So if you're in a busy, post-work traffic zone or something, and one person decides to look down at their phone for too long and not move forward, it's just this ripple effect all the way back to where everything starts. And self-driving cars would just, you'd get in when you're supposed to get in. Everybody would be evenly spaced the entire time. And whatever the rate of speed that needed to happen shouldn't ever have to stop for anything. Assuming we'd come up with really cool ways to have the cars kind of shoot out into traffic and, you know, not have to have everything slow down for them to get in or
pinball
whatever.
Shoots.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is, I'd like this now. In
Replay.
Fact, a lot of people got in for the event this weekend at Nerdtacular. They got in during rush hour traffic. Tom, you had to drive that stuff.
Yeah, I was one of them.
And it's just hideous, and Utah drivers are dumb anyway. So let's please move toward this sooner than later is my hope for your prediction. I like it.
I think
this is absolutely false. I think we will get teleporters before this actually happens, or the big oils will let it happen.
Teleporters. I like the idea of teleporters. Well, I like the idea of driving.
Google's got a self-driving car. They don't have a teleporter yet.
I don't like the idea of being...
Are you sure?
I'm not.
But the idea... Well, yeah, it's one of those NDA things. I don't like the idea of being destroyed and recreated. It doesn't excite me to have to die to teleport.
Well, that's basically what you're doing when you get in a car at 200 miles an hour.
It depends. The thing that I was that I kind of forgot to mention in the whole prediction is there are going to be license tiers. In the future, you'll be able to, you know, so you'll have to, no license is required for a self-driving car. You cannot interact with
anybody. Can just get in the car.
Anyone can get in the car. 13-year-old, get in the car, whatever, go whatever.
Yeah. Babies.
Babies, sure. Well, sure. Babies driving. Wow, that's really not a good idea. But anyway, and then there'll be licenses. So in order to drive with self-driving cars, you need X license so that you can, you know, interact on the same level as a computer.
Yeah, but right now we give licenses to people who can't drive. What makes you think that we will suddenly be better at telling who's good at driving?
I'm hoping that we'll change the driving instructors. They'll be like ex-race car drivers. That's the guys who determine your license. So, like, you've got a license rated for infinity. You know, whatever. Just put your foot on the floor and see where you end up kind of license versus you can drive 35 miles an hour and only in school zones that, you know, have red flashing lights and you have to stop every 5 feet.
No, Mr. Andretti, I swear I'll do better. Just let me take the test again.
Well, Japan actually already has this. They have levels of licenses.
So we need that.
Yeah.
I want that.
We kind of need that. All right, let's move over to you, Rob. Longer view prediction. When you look farther into your crystal ball, do you see just crystal or another prediction?
I had to go a little serious on this one. I think that the processors for computers are going to split apart again, like they did initially, had the MathPap processor. I think that we now have our GPUs, and I think that we're going to get processors for different things and get very specific on those.
Like, well, see, and it's going the other way right now with the so-called accelerated process unit that combines the GPU and the processor on one die, the CPU and the GPU on one die. So do you think it's just going to be more neighborhooding like that, or we're actually going to split back apart into separate dies?
I think that so each application on your system will have its own processor because we have so many right now. We have 8 cores or whatever. I think that each thing on your computer is going to have its own processor instead of its own process. Right.
You mean like a dynamic FPGA kind of thing?
Yeah, but it'd be very specific to the application. So
okay, so here's a question for you. How about this? I was just thinking about this. This is good you brought it up. I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be nice if I had some kind of accelerator chip, some kind of, I don't know, let's call it a WPU, because I want my Wacom Cintiq tablet to be accelerated. I noticed that if I'm getting real big and real complicated with some of the imagery I'm working with, because of the limitations of the GPU or the CPU for that matter, or RAM or whatever, it would be nice for that one piece of functionality if I could somehow have that just speed up and create maybe a greater level of smoothness at higher resolutions or higher pixel dimensions or whatever. Are you thinking that specific, like device specific? You'd have their own, you know, dedicated CPU for that.
Definitely. Like so, that's cool. If I had, you know, Chrome running, and I wanted Chrome always to be good, or my Bitcoin miner to always be, you know, number one on this one processor and stay this way. And we kind of already have that already with like nice values or different things within Linux, and Windows 7 is already kind of that way, but I don't know. I think that we're going to have core per.
So there's going to be the install process, then there's going to be the drivers, and then there's going to be mapping the chip. So like
they'll ship the core for you.
So you have to insert it into your computer.
Right.
So every time you install an application, you have to like install RAM, or is this like a slot in the front, like a little stamp slot?
Well, now that you mention it, maybe you get in the mail or whatever, you order it and you put it into the computer, and there is your processor and application all in one.
I can see that for teleporting.
Going to happen. Because look at the apps. Look at the app store. Well, yeah, I know. It's not like you could be wrong.
You're wrong, sir.
No, but I look at the app store, and everything seems to be going against this, which is to say, you know, everybody just wants to sell you as many apps as possible as easily as possible. I mean, it's so damned easy to download an application off of the web and install it now. But no, we have to make it easier. We have to make a little app store with like cool Fisher Price logos so that, you know, you can't possibly be confused. And saying, well, instead you're going to have to wait for something to come in the mail and insert it, just seems to go against that whole ease of use situation.
It's at 100 years.
I have to make it harder.
Why do you have to make it harder?
I'm a Marine. We have to make it harder.
Well, you could use teleporting for this.
That's your answer for everything.
Excuse for everything.
You know, it's the old Marine saying, make it harder. That's what they say. It's on their little patch on their arm, whatever.
That's what Semper Fi. I thought it meant something else.
Always.
The few, the proud.
I misunderstood this whole time.
But
so you're saying teleport the chips into your...
Yeah,
into
so
your
there's a little thing. I'm completely cool with breaking up a chip and sending... So well, you just teleport it, and the chip just appears on your desk, and then
I don't think you need to. If you've got... I like where you're going with the multi-cores. It's like eventually we have so many cores that every processor, every application just gets its own core. You wouldn't have to install new cores. There'd just be so many in your chip already that you'd have plenty to install as many applications as you want.
So you could just remap the existing cores you have to be that specific application.
Or even if you ran out of cores. Yeah, and if you run out of cores eventually, the next year's model has more cores anyway, and that just keeps getting bigger. To me, the multi-core argument is the same as saying, let's have a chip for every function, because in effect, that is what you're doing. The core acts as a separate, you know, powerhouse for whatever it is you're doing. So really, it's the same argument. More cores means more separated processing power.
Basically. I'm sure Apple would love that if you had 128 cores, you could only have 128 applications. So you've got to buy next year's 129.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor this week, Squarespace.com. Easy-to-use UI for creating and managing a website or blog. If you want to be in the cloud and say, forget about cores, I'm just going to be in the cloud with my website. I'm going to make websites for other people, but I'm going to use Squarespace because it's really super easy, and they don't have to know this. Check them out, Squarespace.com. Optimized for both beginners and experts. If you're a CSS expert, you're still going to love Squarespace because you can get under the hood, but they make it easier getting there. They leave you more time for just tweaking the stuff that you want to tweak and not building up all the tedious stuff from the beginning. You can import your blog from most of the other services you could possibly be using. WordPress or Blogger, Movable Type, and Typepad. And I do know it's WordPress, not WordPresser. I don't know why I said that. But you can import from all of those services and export as well. They're not going to lock you in. They're like, they know that you're going to like Squarespace, so they don't have to put locks on the doors. They know you're going to stay around. Check them out at squarespace.com and You have a special offer because you're listening to us right now. Use the following code, FORECAST6, when you sign up for your free trial. It's a free account. No credit card needed. Just try it out. And if you decide to purchase it, you use that code, FORECAST6, and get 30% off for 3 months. Now, you spell out four, FORCAST, and then the number six, 30% off for 3 months at squarespace.com. We thank them for their support of Forecast. You can have a website going by the time I finish this sentence, as long as I keep talking for just a little bit longer. It's that easy. There was a comma before it's that easy. And then,
just don't save the link.
Yes, exactly.
Well, no, what I'm saying is there's an automatic login for Forecast that allows you to log in. Just don't save it on a public bookmark, please.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Good advice from the Hack 5 penetration tester. Take it seriously. Squarespace.com, offer Forecast 6. We thank them for their support. Time for the crazy-ass predictions, and Rob, we'll start with you. One really far-out forecast. What do you got?
I think that Call of Duty 20 is going to come out where they do this virtual reality thing where you actually go to boot camp and then to war, and some people get killed, but it works.
And so actual deaths, not virtual deaths.
Right. Well, no, they'll call it virtual. They'll call it virtual.
Yeah. But will you actually die?
Yes. That you know, it's force feedback. It gives the reality of reality.
I got you. So it'll be such realistic force feedback that you will die.
So you'll get knocked through the wall, out the window, and you'll just be dead.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It just works. Wow.
I think that we'll be... I'm actually of the opinion that we'll be playing games in the future that will provide the kind of feedback that will be, it'll seem real, but I don't think anybody's going to die. I think of the way it works, because then you don't have new customers for the next version. I think it's just going to, I think it's going to hurt. There and people are going to have a higher threshold of how much pain they're willing to take.
There is a disincentive to your consumer base if you're killing them.
Right.
Call of Duty, the final call.
Call of Duty 21, if you're left.
yeah, if you're still around.
Short of the dying, I think this could be the end of war. So instead of actually going to war, it's just we play Call of Duty 20 with each other if we want to go to war, and then we agree to honor the results.
So this is like how we settled the border disputes and the oil disputes. And
right.
So we're not going to throw rocks at each other. We're going to shoot people online and...
Exactly, because he's making it so virtual, so realistic, and maybe there's a thing short of death. Maybe your troops have the risk of being like knocked into a coma for a year, right? So there's some stakes involved.
Be paralyzed from the waist down for a year,
just for a year,
just for a year.
Yeah,
that's kind of permanent.
I don't know, Rob. Is that any better?
I think that no, not at all. Can't even be serious about this.
Well, I mean, the GG at the end, it'll just be, you know, okay, now you own my country. GG.
Yeah. KK.
KK. KK.
All yours. BRB.
Didn't Vietnam already do this with, like, StarCraft or whatever? They won.
Did they? No, that's you're thinking of Korea. See,
Korea.
Yeah. If they can just get the North to have some electricity, then we're set.
Yeah, the North doesn't play StarCraft. Only the South.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a hardcore thing there, though.
Oh yeah, it's their entire entertainment industry.
Well, they have a whole gaming industry set up around it, and like a television network that transmits.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it's their Super Bowl, but it happens more than we even have. Than we even care about a Super Bowl. It's absolutely crazy. I have an adopted two siblings, or two sisters and a brother, three siblings, who are all from Korea originally. My brother goes back all the time, back and forth, and he says he's primarily grown up here, but he'll go over there and he says it's unbelievable. Everywhere you go, StarCraft is part of the culture, and it's on everything. There are signs everywhere. It's on TV all the time. I mean, they have literally built a culture of sport and competitiveness around a video game developed in Irvine, California. It's crazy to me.
So there's no reason we couldn't build an industry of war around Call of Duty 20.
That's right. Let's make this happen.
Right, Rob?
There you go.
All right. Let's switch over to you, Jason. One really crazy forecast. What do you got for us?
I feel like ours are both fairly morbid. So mine is... So mine is by a million years from now or whatever... you know, crazy ass period of time, we will have depleted the Earth's resources and be forced to move into space colonies, and we will be searching for a new home, or have found new homes among the stars, and we'll just become a race of space rats, just kind of like living in ships and
nomads,
but space nomads.
Space nomads is much cooler than just nomads.
Yeah,
you know what it's like? It's like Waterworld, but in space. Basically, where everything you there is
space
nowhere to
world.
Land.
Yeah, space world.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that idea. That's, I mean, so Dirk I'm one of the few people that actually really likes Waterworld, so that's kind of a problem in itself. But
I'm there.
You're not alone.
I'm the other guy.
I watch it like once a year on purpose, which people think
is
ridiculous. Wait, we
have 50% of the people on this show liked Waterworld?
75%. Yeah.
Oh,
70. Wow. We are out indexing the world.
Which is also 75% of the people who've watched it at all.
Right.
Or
right.
More than once.
Tom secretly likes it, but he won't admit it.
You know, I like the water. It's very
the
pretty.
Currency is dirt.
But yeah. You got to admit, it's not the execution I love. It's the concept that it represents. And the idea that, in fact, I would love to see more sci-fi based on this. The idea that there are no home worlds, there are no docks, there are no stations. Maybe there's stations, but... There's just nowhere else to go. They've destroyed all the worlds, or they've been destroyed, or they're uninhabitable or uninhabitable, whatever. And just fly everywhere, and everyone's got to dock together and barter and trade, and you just create like a really awesome kind of Han Solo simulator with that game or that movie or that whatever. I would play that, watch that, live that if I could. Love that idea.
That's kind of where Bitcoin's going, is the barter and trade situation.
Well, except it is a medium of exchange. It's right. You know, so it's not quite straight barter, but it is where Bitcoin is a barterable thing, right?
But
now.
It's direct. What I mean is, there's no in between. There's always you and the person you are purchasing something from.
Yeah, there's nobody taking a cut, is what you're saying.
We're going to be coming full circle. Essentially, we started with the bartering, then we went to coined money and a government backing it, and now we're going back to being in space and bartering.
Yeah.
The only problem is the name of Bitcoin. They should have named it credits. Like, every sci-fi on the internet and the world has called it credits, and it's not credits.
Or Quatloos.
Or Quatloos.
That's probably trademarked. You could get away with credits, though. Facebook calls their currency credits.
Credits, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're just going to use
Facebook
credits instead of Bitcoin.
I think Facebook probably. Credits, though, are just kind of something they were like, I don't know what to call it, so we'll call it credits.
They're like Microsoft points. It's space money. It's just ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. They should just, the problem with the Microsoft points thing is it is money. It's just this stupid point system we buy with real money so that it's a weird odd number and they can hang on to that, put it in the bank and make a bunch of interest on it. So that's a weird motivation. It's not really an attempt to create a new currency. It's a way to trick us into giving them more money and having them hold on to it. Totally dumb.
The thing is, can you trade it back? Can you get money back from the points?
No, that's the point. Something will cost you 800, let's say 800 points, but you have to buy 1,000 points at a time. I forget the exact
rate. Right, but it's like that.
Yeah, so then you give them the 10, you buy the thing for 8, but they're holding on to the 4 or the 3, just holding on to it. But that's real money that they're just... in a bank, and you can't extract it. And the next time you got to buy something, well, nothing costs 300. Next thing up costs 500. So you got to put in another 1,000, and then they've still got more of your money. It's a pretty good scam, actually.
That's how arcades have been
successful.
Doing it for a long time.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much. Yeah, with tokens and stuff, it's the same thing. Yeah.
So you can only get dollars and 5 tokens per the dollar, so you feel like you're getting a bargain, but then it's a token.
Or if you do $20 worth of tokens, you get an extra free 10%.
Yeah, right. That's how they get you, man.
Dame Busters, these stupid cards, power cards.
I much prefer our future where I can just say, look, I will give you 5 space goats for your wife.
Nice.
And it's all clear. It's all on the table.
5 space goats,
I don't
a
have
cow
any
and
space
a sheep?
Goats. Shoot.
Fine, I'll throw in a space sheep.
Excellent. I get a space sheep.
What time is it, Scott?
Well, if I was to venture to guess, I would say it is our quick fire questions segment of the show. This is where we ask you guys rapid fire style questions, 4 of them each. You don't have time to sit there and think about it. You have to answer from the gut. Them's the rules. And if you're going to live in this town, by gum, you got to live by our rules. So I'm going to start like I often do. And if I can pull my questions up, that'd be great. Here we go. I'm going to be asking
Rob.
Jason, right?
No, you'll
Rob.
Be asking Rob.
Sorry. All right, here it is. Rob, I'm going to ask you my 4 questions. Are you ready and sitting comfortably?
Absolutely not. Go ahead.
All right, perfect. Here we go. If we could have a dedicated one, what planet in our solar system would become the media planet? So imagine a planet in our solar system where all the 24-hour news networks, all the newspapers, all our sources of digital information and entertainment would come from. What planet besides Earth would you choose?
Mercury, because then they would all fry.
Nice.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, Mercury or Pluto? Pluto. Pluto's not nice a planet anymore. Yeah.
It'd just be really slow, fair and balanced, and that kind of stuff. What current dead world leader would you like to see reanimated and placed back in power?
Back in power? That's a hard one. Napoleon, so I can make fun of him.
Hey, Shorty. Right.
Somebody told me the other day the reason he's always got his hand in his shirt in the paintings isn't because he always did that, but it was because the painters hated drawing hands. I don't know how true that is. That could be total.
Maybe he had a deformed hand. It was particularly difficult.
Wiki fakia or something.
Like red lobster claw.
Let's see. Forgetting about the movies for a minute, when the apes rise up, which variation do you hope becomes the most dominant?
Become chimpanzee. They're funny.
Chimps.
All right. And dangerous, as I'm led to believe. Actually, in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I think they are the dominant. They're the dominant species, right? I mean, the gorillas are kind of the grunts. The smart ones are the orangutans, and then the chimpanzees get it all done.
The bonobos are just getting it on.
That's a topic for another show. The gibbons are the wild card, Tom. Let's see. Last question: when we install our personal synthetic beef manufacturing units in our homes, thinly sliced or ground chuck?
Thinly sliced or ground chuck? Ground chuck. My wife makes this awesome thing called taco rice that I'm eating in a few minutes.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, definitely awesome thing that I would make her make every time that we could, virtually.
Sounds really good right now. Well, congratulations. You've made me both hungry and succeeded at this experiment we call Four Questions. Congratulations, Tom.
Yay! All right, over to you, Jason. Are you sitting comfortably, sir?
Possibly.
Good, then we shall begin. Question number one. When Rome declined, Europe went into the so-called Dark Ages. Could that happen again?
Yes.
To whom?
Us.
All, like, the whole planet at once?
The whole planet at once.
How's that going to happen?
Well, oil's going to go away,
uh-huh.
And then we're going to be without a means of powering cars, and then we're not going to have our delivery network's going to fail. We'll be left to things like trains, and they don't work all that well for, you know, areas that can't access them because we don't have gas to go from the train to
Amazon Fresh will totally fail.
It will totally fail.
What about our auto-driving cars?
They won't work without gas unless we come up with auto-driving hydrogen cars.
All right.
Or electric.
Question number two, how likely is it that our first contact with aliens will be when we visit their planet?
Ooh, good one.
Not likely. They've probably already been here, because I know that when I came, I mean, when...
Jason is an alien. We've already confirmed this on Hack 5.
Yeah, we've already done that. I think they'll be visiting us, because I think we blast so much stuff into the ether that it's eventually going to come back to bite us.
The best way to hide the fact that you're an alien is say you're an alien, because then nobody believes you.
I'm an alien too.
Aliens like Waterworld.
Question number three, will you eat lab grown meat?
No.
Why not?
Because it's grown in a lab.
It's still meat.
It's still, yes, it's technically meat, but so is that stuff that they use to glue meat back together. That's still technically meat.
Right.
But it's not. It somehow I think it's going to do bad things. I could say give me cancer, but that's kind of the cop out. But I like things to be fresh.
So well, what if it was genetically
grown from the lab?
Genetically identical meat, like it was as real genetically and molecularly speaking as real meat.
I mean, if you fed it to me and didn't tell me it was real meat, and I couldn't tell. It's all in the perception, really. Right. I mean.
Question number four, what are the chances of another sentient species arising on Earth, and if so, which one will it be?
Dolphins.
Already there. Next sentient. No.
next sentient species outside of that?
Yeah, no, I kind of think you're right about dolphins. Yeah. But let's say we're already counting dolphins.
Okay.
As Douglas Adams has proven we should.
Oh, yes, as Douglas Adams.
What would you go? Where would you go after that?
I would have to either go with cats, because they have human-like characteristics where they have personalities, or go to the complete opposite side, end of the species, like giraffes.
Giraffes.
I could totally see space them goats. At top out. Space. There you go, space goats.
Oh, and then I'm not going to want to trade them, though, because they'll be so much more valuable.
They'll be talking.
Sentient. Yeah. And they'll tell me, you can't trade me, I'm a sentient species.
And it'd also be cool to have a giant sentient species like a giraffe.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, we're going to take you over by just running you over.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll have a cartoon talk show called Space Goats Coast to Coast.
And that's the end of our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you both for being here. This was really fun.
It was. I enjoyed
it. Thanks for
having me. Jason Applebaum, let folks know what you're doing, Hack 5 and beyond.
Yeah, so I've got a bunch of really cool announcements coming up with apps that are going on that I've got kind of in the works, and they might potentially have hardware implementations. That's a great word. Hardware
implementations.
Yeah. Implementations. Follow me on Twitter to find out all about the awesome announcements. I don't have anything right now to announce, but I will in the coming 2 or 3 weeks.
Rob Fuller, a.k.a. Mubix, thank you for joining us, and let folks know what you've been up to and where they can find you online.
So you can find me on room362.com. I'm going to be speaking at DerbyCon, and I work for Rabbit7, do a bunch of stuff with the Metasploit project, Metasploit framework, pro, console, all that stuff. And Twitter /Mubix, and that's it.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. Scott Johnson, you have no more Nerdtacular to promote. What are you going to do with the rest of your life till next year?
Well, I'll tell you what. I do have this to promote. We recorded everything we did during the event, all the panels and everything. Every single thing. Even that part where you said that thing you wish
but
you wouldn't have said.
I didn't think that was being recorded.
Oh, the whole thing, dude. You signed a waiver. You don't remember any of this, do you?
I don't remember
So all of that stuff is going to end up on feeds on the show. In fact, a bunch of it already has. If you're a listener of FilmSack or would like to hear our live edition of FilmSack where we cover Tremors, from Netflix, then check that out on FilmSack at FilmSack.com. We got this weekend going up the podcaster panel on TMS. That'll be up on that feed. And also I put up the final score feed for the video game panel, which Tom was also on. And we had some great industry experts as well on that panel. All of this stuff is going to show up on various shows. So the best thing to do is go to frogpants.com. You'll find links to photo groups and all that stuff as it starts coming in. And that's just starting now since people have gotten home. All kinds of crazy stuff. So, you know, if you have any interest in that at all and want to see the kind of good time we had, frogpants.com is the place to be.
And don't forget to leave your comments on our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email. Let us know what you think about in the future. Forecastpodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.
But it's only 32 years away.
Way.